When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Hey guys, what's going on? This is Rich from the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. Just want to put a quick little note before this episode. We recorded this hours before we learned about the news of Bill Russell's death. So we had this episode scheduled, recorded, everything ready to go. And then we found out about the news of Bill Russell's death. We decided to still schedule and release this episode as normal. But don't worry, we are going to do a huge, huge episode this week. Covering the life and the career of Bill Russell, one of the more iconic figures in sports history, of course, basketball history. We've done a numerous episodes about Bill Russell. We had an entire series about Bill Russell 4 years ago called WrestleMania, but we are going to do as much as we can to honor his life and his career later this week. But we had this episode ready to go. We kind of wrestled with, hey, do we even release this thing or do we hold off and release our Bill Russell episode? Instead, we decided to release this one. So enjoy this episode about dynasties and tiers of dynasties and other fun discussions. And keep in mind that later this week, you will get an entire episode about the life and career of Bill Russell. We are going to do that for you guys. But yeah, this episode will be as normally scheduled and everything. Just wanted to let you guys know that this was recorded before we learned of Bill Russell's death. So again, we will have an episode later this week on the life and career of Bill Russell. But in the meantime, enjoy this episode. Thank you.
Hello, welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast, brought to you by StatHead. I am Jason, and with me as usual is Rich. Hello, Rich.
Hello, brought to you by StatHead. We're big time here. Jeez.
Yeah, more on that in a little bit. But love it. Yeah, it's exciting stuff. Yeah. And we are here to talk about NBA dynasties, which is, of course, a favorite topic of ours. We've spent some time talking about this before, but I think we're going to adjust our thinking a little bit on it and talk about the tiers for NBA dynasties, kind of trying to see if we can kind of get some division, talk about the most dominant dynasties, the kind of the middle tier and kind of a bottom tier. I think we're going to be flexible on our definition of dynasty. There might be some teams we talk about as dynasties here, like in that tier three, that some people might not say fits their exact definition of dynasties, but we're willing to be flexible here, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I definitely think we are. And I was kind of surprised when, when we were talking about this, and again, like you said, we like to talk about dynasties. We've done a few different episodes about that. One we did a couple years ago was, the Warriors are a dynasty now, right? And that one, we kind of explored what makes a dynasty and what doesn't make a dynasty. And we'll do that a little bit here as well. But I was kind of surprised too. We on Twitter, we put out, hey, we're going to do a show about dynasties and, what to you makes a dynasty? Like what, and it's pretty funny the amount of different definitions. We kind of think that everybody might have the same idea of like, oh, this is clearly a dynasty, or that's clearly a dynasty, or this is clearly a dynasty. But it was all over the place, that what people said. A lot of really cool stuff, a lot of really interesting stuff. I was on a Discord channel too, and I was mentioning it and talking with people. And there were some really, really fun, interesting debates going on about, what makes a dynasty. All good debates, which is honestly, believe it or not, on Twitter and Discord, not always possible. But it tends to be that way with us. We have a nice little section of the internet that isn't too mean to each other. It's pretty nice sometimes. Sure. But it's pretty fascinating how many people define a dynasty, and we're going to try to do that a little bit here. I will bring up some of the other stuff that people did mention to us of, hey, I think this makes a dynasty, or I think this makes a dynasty. But yeah, we're going to be flexible about what we call a dynasty here and how to define it. But we're also going to try to give you an insight into what I think you and I both think a quote unquote dynasty is and what makes a dynasty. And I think these tiers are a great way to do that, where, you know, are all these teams dynasties? Kind of, sort of, but sure. Right. We try to, you know, dynasties with a capital D, we try to, you know, define a little bit more here than just, you know, your other dynasties. And it's tough. Like there's not as many like slam dunks. Oh yeah, those guys are definitely a dynasty. That I kind of thought, you know, when we were starting to get ready for the show that, okay, well there's, you know, this team and this team. And it's going to be funny. We have like a couple locks that are like, no doubt, 100% locks, and then a lot of other like, hey, let's debate these teams. So I think it should be fun.
Sure. Yeah, I agreed. And yeah, it's, believe it or not, it's been 4 years actually since we did that Warriors our dynasty show now, after they won their third championship, you know, back to back with the second one, back to back with Durant. So a long time since we did that. Obviously the Warriors have, you know, added to their legacy since then. So we'll be talking about that, where they are, where they maybe they could get to. So yeah, lots of interesting discussion here. So just to kind of set the definitions here, we're talking about tiers for NBA Dynasty. So we have this defined in three tiers. Tier one, dominant over a long period, only a few teams that clearly fit that definition. A couple that, you know, maybe you could argue, depending on how you want to make that argument. Tier two, superiority over a long period, plus some level of short-term dominance. So that the idea of dominance versus superiority, I think, is going to be interesting in a couple of cases. And then tier three, I would say dominance over a short period or excellence over a long period. Yeah. So, so we'll see how it goes. I would say the tier one locks, we're going to this. I think this business, not a lot of debate on this, but we'll see how it goes. So I would say that there are three teams in NBA history that are absolute locks for a tier one dominance over a long period. Very clear, really no debate on this. First, the Bill Russell Celtics, 11 championships and 12 finals in 13 years, 8 titles in a row. No debate about that.
No, this is a that is the very definition of a dynasty. Yeah. Is that 11 titles, 12 finals, 13 years, 8 in a row. That's a dynasty. No debate. No one should. Yeah. Even think about debating it. We shouldn't even spend any more time debating it. Lock it in, done, ready to go. Yeah. Let's go.
Easy enough. The George Mikan Lakers, 6 championships in 7 years, absolute dominance of the early NBA.
But they were all plumbers, though. Does it count if they were plumbers? Shut up. Yes. Hey. Yeah. Mikan Lakers. 6 and 7, absolutely dynasty.
Hey, listen, if an NBA player can unclog my toilet, that's a benefit.
That's you know what? Honestly, if they were plumbers, that's pretty good. Like, that's not easy to do. To play professional basketball and be a plumber, that's also two good incomes there. I mean, maybe not as good of an income at this time, but you know, in the offseason, you're doing plumbing. You're doing pretty good work there. Rooting out some pipes. I kind of need one. So if you know a professional basketball player,
I've been trying to change out my daughter's sink for like 2 weeks. So,
so if Marvin Bagley wants to come and help you change your sink out, I mean,
respect the plumbers. Yeah, absolutely.
That sounds great. Yeah.
Right. All right. And then the Michael Jordan Bulls, 6 titles in 8 years, 2-3. Streaks of 3 in a row. I don't want to get Pat Riley mad. We don't want the ghost of Pat Riley haunting the show again.
We just got that Stathead sponsorship.
We're going to get in trouble. Absolutely. Yeah. Speaking of Stathead, it's exciting times. We want to take this time to let you know this episode of Over and Back is brought to you by Stathead. It is the most powerful research tool in sports. Stathead is powered by the sports reference sites that you trust and use every day, including, of course, for listeners of this show, Basketball Reference.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's we use that. And longtime listeners of the show know that we use Stathead and we use Basketball Reference for everything that we do on the show. Most everything on the show. It's probably the tool we've used more than anything. Our brains first. Our wit second, I guess. And then Stathead third for sure. We use Stathead.com for a lot of stuff on the show constantly. From the moment that Stathead.com released their, you know, subscription model, we were day one subscribers and have been day one subscribers since that time. But we want you to become a subscriber to Stathead as well. And you can use our exclusive promo code BACK. That's BACK, B-A-C-K, to get $20 off an annual subscription to any of Stathead.com's products. So promo code BACK gets you $20 off an annual subscription to any of Stathead's products. But we have a little bit of a bonus deal for those of you listening to the show on either August 1st or August 2nd, so it's a tight little window here from when we release this episode to when you can possibly use this promo. But if you are one of those lucky listeners, you are going to get Stathead.com's best deal they've pretty much ever done, ever. They're going to do a promo code DEADLINE22 to get a onesportsstathead.com subscription for only $58. Or you can use the promo code FREEAGENT22 to get the entire suite of stathead.com products for only $128. So again, it's DEADLINE22 gets you one sport of stathead.com subscription for only $58. And then FREEAGENT22 gets you all of the suite of stathead.com products. Baseball reference, basketball reference, football reference, hockey reference, all that stuff for $128. So that is only on August 1st and August 2nd. If you listen to this on August 3rd, we're sorry, but hey, our deal still rules too. You can use that promo code back and you're going to get $20 off no matter what. So you can always use that back promo code, but if you are listening to this on the 1st or the 2nd, deadline 22 to get the one sports stat head for $58 or free agent 22 to get the entire suite for $128. So that is a really, really good deal. And our deal rules too. So all three of those deals are fantastic deals for the most powerful tool in sports reachers.
Absolutely. Yeah. And thanks to stathead.com for sponsoring this week's show, giving us the tools to take our research to the next level.
Absolutely. All right, let's do this.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we've got our tier one teams. Now we got to talk about tier two. So I think the first two teams that we need to talk about are the 1980s Lakers and the Steph Curry Warriors. I think that you can make a case for tier one. I think in a couple of these, I think they're more solidly in tier two. Let's see what we talk about. So we'll go with the Lakers first. So the case for the Lakers, of course, Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you know, being their most dominant players, 5 rings in 9 years between 1980 and 1988, a total of 9 finals in 12 years between 1980 and 91. I do want to say, you know, obviously championships are important, but getting to the finals, I think, helps your case.
I'm with you too. Yeah, I'm definitely, right. I think I've always been pretty consistent about this. I think going to conference finals too, to me, is something that I always look at. Like, rings are, obviously you want as many rings as possible. When you win, like the Russell Celtics did, then you are just so clearly, obviously, a dynasty and you're the best ever and all that sort of stuff. But I think just getting there is huge. I think getting to the conference finals is huge too. I mean, sure, you have to get through a lot of stuff. You have to have a great regular season. You have to have a great playoff run. Yeah. I think getting to the conference finals should matter. And I think getting to the finals should matter a lot more. I mean, yes, rings are rings and everybody loves rings and everybody can debate rings and obsess about rings. But yeah, getting to the finals. And to me, that's what makes this Lakers team a really interesting case for tier one, is that 9 finals in 12 years. Yeah, only got the 5 rings in 9 years. That's still pretty good. Let's be honest. 5 rings in 9 years is pretty good. But 9 finals in 12 years, that's pretty damn good over the course of 11 seasons too. 12 years, 11 seasons. You know, that's nuts. That's really, really, to me, important stuff that I think should matter.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the fact that they made the finals in 89 and 91, even though they lost, should help their case.
For
being a dynasty. It's like, you know, there's always sort of the Jordan, you know, they won 6 title, you know, they won each time they made the finals. But like, if they had, let's say they beat the Pistons in 90 and they lost in the finals to the Blazers in 1990 and everything else was the same, that should actually help them. Like, being in the finals should actually help your case. And sometimes it's sort of like a backwards thing where we think, oh, they lost in the finals, it's not as good. But actually, as you said,
So weird. Yeah, right. And it happens in other sports too. Like, going to the Super Bowl and then losing is like worse than not going to the Super Bowl, because like, this guy's a choker. And it's like, wait a minute, I was in the Super Bowl. Better than every other team. Yeah. Like, what the hell? Yeah, the Bills are like, look at these pile of chokers. They're like, we got to 4 Super Bowls in a row. Really good. Like, we should be commended for that. Not like, oh man, these guys can't get it done when it matters. It's like, no, we get it done when it matters all the time. We just don't win this particular game. Yeah, but I'm right with you. So we are in lockstep on that for sure.
All right. I mean, I would say definitely, you know, the other team, and we'll get into them later, of course, is the Larry Bird 1980 Celtics. But, you know, clearly superior to the Celtics over that time. The 80 to 88 stretch, especially 5 rings to 3 rings, including 2-1 head-to-head. Now, the Celtics did have 3 rings to the Lakers 2 during a portion of that stretch from 81 to 86 that people kind of bring up, which I think is probably the main counter argument for putting them in tier one. Again, it's not quite dominance. I say there's clearly superiority to the Celtics and to the teams of that era, not dominance. They did beat the Sixers 2-1 head-to-head in the finals between 80 and 83. They tied the Pistons 1-1 in finals between 88 and 89. They were also swept twice in the finals 83-89. That matters a little bit to me. I mean, it's hard to, you know, when it's hard to say dominance when you were swept twice in the finals. That's a little bit, maybe it's a small thing, but it is sort of thing. I mean, I kind of think the difference between tier one and tier two is like the difference between having like a super majority or a majority in the Senate. It's a weird comparison, but I'm going to go with it anyway.
No. Yeah. And it brings up a really interesting debate about, are you still a dynasty if you're not like clearly superior to everybody else? Like it's sort of like it brings up like a planet debate, similar to our solar system, where can you be a planet if there's like other kind of very similar sized things near you? Like, that ended up being why they took Pluto away. They're like, well, Pluto's not dominant enough to keep these other objects out of here. So no, Pluto is not a planet. So
Pluto is a dynasty in my mind. I don't think it's a question.
Right. But yeah. I think we can all agree. Right. Dynasty Pluto, definitely. And I think that was a pretty interesting debate that we were having on Twitter and other places as well, is that, can you have two dynasties at the same time? Like, are the Celtics of the 80s and the Lakers of the 80s, are they both dynasties? If they're both at the same time and they weren't powerful enough to push the other away, they weren't powerful enough where one is clearly superior. I'm with you that I agree the Lakers are superior to the Celtics, but I think people might debate you. Like you said, they might debate you with, hey, that early stretch, the Celtics were definitely better. They had more, they did this, they did that. And like, I could absolutely see an argument to be made for that. I think overall in totality, the Lakers, throughout the rest of the decade, the Celtics started to lose a little bit of the fire in the last, eight parts of the 80s or whatever, as injuries and age piled up or whatever. And the Lakers kind of jumped ahead, but I don't know. Yeah. Like, I guess that is a pretty fun debate to have, is that can you be a dynasty if there's another dynasty, at the same time as you? And I guess East-West, it definitely works. Maybe if they were in the same conference, you could say, well, no, not really, because like they're in the same conference as this team. I don't know. I feel like they can both exist, and I think but it does bring up an interesting point that being the Magic and Kareem Lakers, because they were so superior over the course of that decade, do they belong in a higher tier than those Celtics? And I would agree with you that they do.
They definitely belong in hierarchy. Yeah, it depends on what tier you want to put them in.
Right,
is there a case for tier one, or is it just because, again, like the Celtics were a strong team during, equally a dynasty? I'm going to put quotes around dynasty here, but yeah, I think the Celtics are more of a tier three dynasty. But I do think that the Lakers can be a tier two dynasty. The Celtics can be a tier three dynasty. Again, being flexible with that dynasty word, if you want to say great team or whatever, you substitute something else, that's fine. But I don't think, I don't think they can both be in the same tier at the same time. And I don't think that the Lakers can be a tier one dynasty because they didn't show that clear dominance over that time.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree.
Okay. So how about the Steph Curry Warriors? What do you think about them?
Yeah, they're an interesting one too. And this, when we were talking with people, one person brought up a debate that they thought that the Curry Warriors were even more important of a dynasty and maybe belonged in a separate tier, in tier one or whatever, because stylistically they changed the NBA too. And that was a really interesting thing to think about, where I had never even thought about the style of play. I'm just thinking about, okay, rings and finals and success and that sort of stuff. And someone said, well, what about completely changing the game, like completely radically altering the way that basketball is being played? Doesn't that maybe put you in a different tier where this team, everybody had to basically change how they were playing, how they structured teams, how they, and I don't know if we're exactly doing that show, but I think it is an interesting thing to think about is not only did they have dominance over a long period, but they were so dominant that other teams were like, well, we need to completely change how we play basketball because how we're playing basketball, we're never going to beat these guys. So we have to change how we play basketball. We have to change what we do. We have to change how we do. And that's an interesting thing. That's definitely an interesting debate that it'll go to some other quote unquote dynasties that we're going to talk a little bit later. Where the similar things happen, where it was like, all right, well, these guys are so good that teams are now altering how they're building their team to try to compete with these guys. And I think that makes them a very, very interesting case for tier one. I probably want to put them in tier two, but they do. I mean, it's going to be an interesting thing. Let's talk through it and we'll figure that out. But I don't know. I'm really close to putting them in tier one, but let's talk it out and see.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you got four rings and six finals in 8 years from 2015 to 2022. They made five finals in a row. And I do think, especially that five in a row matters. The Russell Celtics are the only other NBA franchise to have made the finals five or more times in a row. And even with two losses in that stretch, I think that's unique and special, obviously deserves consideration.
Oh, so, and especially in this league. I mean, yeah, you have the Celtics of that league where obviously it's still a very tough league, but the Celtics are like just smarter than everybody. They know what they're doing more than every other team basically in basketball. You know, in the modern era, you have a lot of very smart people running a lot of very smart teams. Not all the teams, you know, the Kings do exist, so there's not all smart people running smart teams. But for the most part, every team isn't run, you know, it's being run as efficiently as possible with as much data as possible with as much, you know, and all this sort of stuff. And yet still these guys make it to as many finals as they do. And they're right there with the Russell Celtics. That has to matter. It just has to. Even with the two losses, that has to matter getting there that many times in a row.
Sure. Now, what's counts against them, of course, is that they had a weird 2-year dip. You know, 1 year they have the worst record in the league. That's obviously, you know, extenuating circumstances. You know, basically
a little intentional too. Hey, Steph, how's that hand? It's doing okay. No. Right. It's doing bad.
I mean,
what are you talking about? I can play. No.
Right. They lose Durant. Klay Thompson's out for basically two seasons. Steph's out almost that entire year. So it's not like they were playing with the full deck. And then the next year, you know, they kind of get their bearings. They barely miss the playoffs. They get the play in, but they lose in the they do not make the playoffs. But of course, then they come back and win the championship this year once they're kind of at full strength again. So obviously I think being the worst team in the league, during that 8-year stretch, you know, one of those seasons, that hurts your case for dominance, with the extenuated circumstances. Yeah. Obviously their main competition was LeBron James. They had four straight years, facing the Cavs in the finals with LeBron. They beat LeBron and the Cavs head-to-head 3-1. If they'd won all six finals, I think absolutely clearly, would be a tier one team. They could still, and they could still get there in theory. I mean, they're not necessarily done yet. A couple of their key players, obviously Clay and Draymond are older and not as strong as they used to be, but they do have Wiggins, who's, still pretty young, still in his prime. Steph's obviously amazing, and they've got a lot of talented young players. So stretching it out, is a possibility. I mean, if they win another championship, they have two back-to-back championships, five finals in, or, five championships, seven finals in 9 years. Let's just say they win it next year. I don't think that's super likely, but it's not out of their own possibility. Maybe one more gets them to a clearly tier one. I think they have a case. I think the other thing is how much were they dominant over LeBron, or were they just superior over LeBron? We're going to talk about more about LeBron individually later. Maybe we can re-talk about that once we get to LeBron, but I think that's worth discussing as well.
Yeah, and it definitely is. Yeah, I'm with you that maybe I'm going to put them in tier two right now. If they come back this year and win a title, I think they're probably tier one. The worst record in the league, that's a tough one, because you're always going to look at that and go like, what the heck? You know, there's going to be people 25 years from now, 30 years from now, they're going to look and go, what the heck happened with that year? Like, we lived it. We're living it right now. So we kind of are well aware that it was not exactly, it was extenuating intended circumstances in a lot of ways, that this was kind of the goal. And it again, speaks to a different NBA where it's like, having the worst record in the league is not the worst thing, because we'll get a good draft pick. We'll do that sort of stuff that'd be unheard of in like the Russell Celtics years. Or they're smart enough, they maybe would have done that too, but they knew what they were doing. But it definitely does hurt it. I mean, it's such a clear and clean, those other teams we talked about in tier one, the Russell, it's clean. You look at their Basketball Reference page and it's just like, oh yeah, look at these guys, they're just winning titles and they're winning all these games every single year. Jordan Bull, same thing. It just looks weird when you look at these Warriors and go, wait, what happened here with these 2 years? But I think maybe, like you said, if they get those back-to-back titles, if they win this year and then they get that, they go back-to-back again and they win another, title, then maybe it looks a little cleaner and it looks a little bit more obvious. And maybe you forget those two years don't really matter as much, because it's like, wow, look at what they did. So, I'm with you that maybe tier two for now. The stuff about LeBron, I think that'll be fun to talk about when we get to LeBron, because he's kind of we quoted him as a single player dynasty, because obviously he moved around a bunch of different places during that time. But no, I agree. I would put him in, or I'd put the Curry Warriors in tier two for now. But I think very, very close to becoming a tier one team.
Okay. Yeah. I would say that's we will revisit that when we talk about LeBron, but I'm with you on that. So now we've got a couple of other tier two candidates, and there's a lot of variability here depending on what you define them, what era you're talking about. So the 2000s Lakers and the 2000s Spurs. So basically, yeah, we're talking about two candidates from roughly the same period. I'm going to put Kobe in quote Lakers and the Duncan Spurs. Obviously, the early 2000s Lakers are more, Kobe obviously very important, but Shaq obviously the best player on those teams. So we got some decisions to make about the 2000s Lakers before we get them head to head. So for the moment, let's just say that we're going to put the 2000 to 2010 Lakers together and call them one dynasty, which is going to be a controversial position. I don't know how you feel about that, Rich. We did a poll on Twitter, and the listeners who participated in that definitely were not a fan of that. I actually do think there's a case there, but for the moment, let's just put them together and see what we come up with, and then we'll talk about whether that's it merits it or not.
Yeah, so. It's really weird. Yeah, this is there's kind of one path that connects them all, but there's also kind of no other. There's like there's like a few little things that connects them, and it does seem like it shouldn't be the case. But then you kind of look at it and you're like, it sort of is. You know, I don't know. It's a very interesting thing, because there was those kind of 4 years in the abyss, and where, you know, things were just a little strange. And there's the Rudy Tomjanovich year, and there's Swish Parker's there, and you're like, I don't know, is this the same? But then, you know, the two of the three most central figures to that first part of the dynasty are part of the second part as well. And that it definitely brings up a very, very interesting. Yeah, I don't know that I am actually comfortable with either way. Still, I'm still very weird, because I will one day be like, no way, these teams are totally different. Come on, there's no way. And then the next day I'll be like, Phil and Kobe, the Lakers, why not? Right. You know, but yeah, it's really weird. I'm glad our listeners helped us settle that debate, sort of, kind of.
Sure. Yeah. All right. So if we put them together, the 2000 to 2010
together,
Lakers.
No way. No. What? I can't make up my mind. Yeah.
All right. They have 5 rings and 7 finals in 11 years versus the 99 to 2007 Spurs, who have 4 rings and 4 finals in 9 years. We're going to set aside the 2013 and 14 Spurs, at least for now. We'll get into that comparison in more detail below. First, let's talk about the Lakers, the arguments for putting those Lakers together. So putting basically the 2000 to 2004 and 2008 to 2010 Lakers together. So the two stretchers, they both have Kobe, obviously. They both have Derek Fisher. They both have the same coaching staff, same ownership, same executives, et cetera. Is that significantly different from the beginning and the end of other comparable dynasties? For example, Tim Duncan, only common player between the 1999 and 2007 Spurs. 2003 and 05 and 07 Spurs, however, all of them had Duncan, Bowen, Ginobili, and Parker. So a lot of continuity in those last three championships for the Spurs, but Duncan is the only one there at the beginning.
Right, Duncan and Pop.
Popovich, obviously, yes, as well. So, yeah, I mean, similar to the Lakers in that way. So that's interesting, right? I mean, Duncan began with David Robinson. You know, David Robinson was arguably, I mean, they were like neck and neck on that first team, but, David Robinson was an extremely important player there, and they didn't have him at the end. So, that's certainly similar to the Shaq situation. They just got there in a different way.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And yeah, when you look at like some of those tier one teams, you know, Russell Celtics, yeah, there was a few guys that came in and out, but for the most part, that was like a locked in team for most of the time. Yeah, a few parts, would drop off here and there, but the bulk of the guys were there forever. The Mike and Lakers, very similar as well. The bulk of the guys were there. And the Jordan Bulls, I mean, other than adding, or swapping out, Horace Grant for Dennis Rodman, basically, like it's Phil, it's Pippen, it's Jordan. But with that said,
Yeah, all the supporting players change.
That's true. So it does make a very interesting. Yeah, it's like the supporting cast of the second three in a row was definitely a completely different than the first one. I mean, yeah, Ron Harper, Steve Kerr, all these guys are there in that second run. Tony Kukoc that are not there in that first run. So, yeah, man, I don't know. Right. It does bring up an interesting point. Is like, well, why do we hold those dynasties? It's like, oh yeah, those are cool. And then this one, which the key. Most of the key pieces are still there, except for obviously one giant key piece. But I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that it would be similar to like if Pippen left the Bulls after Jordan retires, Pippen gets traded to the Sonics or whatever, and then Jordan wins three titles with Sean Kemp or whatever. Like, are we then still calling that Jordan Bulls a dynasty? Probably, right? Like, yeah. I think. But should we? Well, like, I don't know. Yeah.
All right. Well, okay. Let's say Jordan retires and somehow the Bulls get Shaq, and Shaq and Pippen win like championships with, let's say Jordan never comes back and let's say the 99 Bulls still have Pippen and Shaq, and then they win a couple titles. Like, yeah, that doesn't seem like that would be kept together. That doesn't seem natural. Right.
I mean, sounds great to me. I wish that scenario happened, by the way, much better than what did happen in Chicago.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, that one scene does seem very different to me, but that's just hard. That's a hard mental thing. Yeah, it's difficult. But yeah, some of the others, I mean, Russell and Sam Jones are, only players who were there the first 2 years of the and the last 2 years of the Celtics dynasty. Everyone else on the first Celtics title team had retired by 65. So a lot of them were there for a long time, but there were only a few common players there. Mm-hmm. But the only common players from 59 and 66, which is the first and last year of the 8-year run, were Russell, Sam Jones, and Casey Jones. So, a lot of changes to those teams at the beginning and the end. Yeah, Magic was the only player on the 80 and 91 Lakers. They also had different coaches, and Magic, Kareem, and Cooper were the only ones who were both on the 80 and 89 Lakers. So, a lot of changes there too. Jordan Pippen, the only players who are on both the 91 and the 96 Bulls. So not even at the end of the Bulls, the beginning of the second three in a row was only Jordan Pippen. Phil, obviously, as well. So, yeah, I don't know. And also the down period for the Lakers, wasn't as far down as it was for the Curry Warriors. It was one season longer. But, I think that there is – a lot of cases, but we do have some arguments against as well. If you want to get into that.
Yeah, let's do that. So the two stretches, obviously, that we mentioned here, 2000 to 2004, 2008, 2010, both Kobe and Fisher, same coach staff that you said. You mentioned the Duncan Spurs, where the connection kind of stays the same, all that sort of stuff. The arguments against, really, I guess, would be that Shaq and how important Shaq was to that first run. 2000 to 2004, he wasn't part of that later run, but he was so important to that first run and so dominant, especially in the early couple years, that 2000, 2001, like that year, it's just Shaq. Kobe does catch up a little bit in later years. So when you do look at that, the entire run, they're not that much different. They're scoring-wise, Shaq's at 27 points per game during that stretch. Kobe is at 26.2. So it's actually not as big of a gap as you would think. But again, Kobe does a lot of catching up in those final couple years there. 12 rebounds per game for Shaq. Obviously, he's going to have a lot more rebounds than Kobe. Kobe only has 6 rebounds. Shaq's going to have 2.6 blocks per game. On the flip side, Kobe, 5.3 assists per game. Effective field goal percentage, and I think that may be for people that watched those Lakers years, Shaq had 57.6 effective field goal percentage. Kobe had 48.1. Obviously, Kobe's taking difficult shots. He's taking mid-range jumpers. He's doing all this sort of stuff. Shaq is just, backing guys down and throwing his nuts in their face basically every single time. And it was pretty wild. Like, stat wise, it might not seem that different, but like, go and watch like the 2000 finals, go and watch like the 2002 finals. It's like, Shaq is so clearly like the reason that team is Kobe's obviously a great part of that team, very important. That team doesn't win titles without Kobe. They're not getting anywhere close to that. I mean, Shaq was just so dominant that time. So crazy. So nuts at that point. And that's where I think the debate then kind of resides, is that now he is gone from these other teams. What happens then Kobe well, and Luke Walton are the only guys between the 2004 and 2008 Lakers. Phil and Fisher both leave and come back. So Phil decides, hey, I'm done with this coaching thing. I don't want any of this. The Lakers say, hey, Rui Tomjanovich, this is going to work great. That lasts, what, 35 games, 36 games or whatever. And then there's, what, Fred Hamlin or something, Frank Hamlin or whatever.
Frank Hamlin comes in.
That didn't work all that well. Fisher comes and leaves. He goes to Utah, I think, and then he was on another team after that, I thought.
The Warriors.
Warriors,
then Utah.
And then he comes back. So you have coaching continuity, and sometimes these do change coaches, but they tend to be mostly promoted in-house or former players or something like that. The Lakers have that very weird, I don't know how much we, you know, it doesn't script the dynasty enough to have this weird Rudy Tomjanovich year smacked in the middle there. Does it matter enough to screw up the dynasty? Does it screw up the lineage a little bit more than it should? I mean, the Bulls one, again, is pretty clean. Phil's there the entire time. It works out pretty well. The Celtics one, you go from Red to Bill Russell, which is fine because Bill Russell's been there no matter what. So it feels like a straight line. There's just this weird, Rudy is just like, what? Get out of here. That's crazy. Like, it'd be like if Steve Kerr got quit and not even if Mike Brown was the coach. I'm trying to think of who the Warriors could hire for, 3 years. And it would be like, I don't know. That's kind of weird that guy was the coach. I don't know if that still keeps it. But coach, I think that's important too, to keep that lineage alive, is that same coach. But do we kill them because there was the one random Rudy Tomjanovich year? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the Lakers, the 80s Lakers had four coaches,
True. Yeah. Right.
So yeah, I mean, now, yeah, I mean, obviously Riley got promoted within, Mike Dunleavy was just kind of there at the end. So what, it was mostly Riley, but yeah, it was definitely, there were other coaches obviously involved as well.
I always forget that Dunleavy coached that year, the team that last.
Yeah, right.
Just there's Dunleavy. How's that going? Not great.
All right. So yeah, it's tough. I mean, and obviously the case. I think the case is both. So let's stick with, we're going to consider the 2000s Lakers as one entity, and let's compare them to what it would be versus 2000 Spurs.
So, yeah, let's do that.
Again, the Duncan Spurs, 4 rings in 9 years between 99 and 2007, 5 rings and 6 finals in 16 years if you go between 99 and 2014. So I would say 5 rings in 16 years, probably stretching the term superiority over that time. I mean, they're excellent over that time, and we'll get into exactly how excellent they are. But I think superiority during that time, there's other teams that I think were superior to the Spurs during those stretches. Now, 4 rings in 9 years, definitely a better case. So how long is it fair to stretch things out? So if you look from the years 99-2010, the Lakers have 5 rings in 7 finals. The Spurs have 4 rings in 4 finals. If you look between 99 and 2014, the Lakers still 5 rings, 7 finals. They were over 600, 11 seasons out of that. The Spurs, 5 rings in 6 finals, over 600 all 16 seasons of that, which is obviously pretty amazing. So is it fair to extend this far? Certainly the Lakers were attempting to win the championship. They're putting teams together that it thought could do so. 2013 is, of course, the now this is going to be fun Kobe Nash Dwight team. So it's not like the Lakers gave it up during that time. They were still trying to win championships basically during the thing. If we do extend it out, the Lakers do have more finals over that period and the same number of rings that the Spurs do, but they did have down periods that the Spurs did not have.
Yeah, and I think that makes a really compelling case for the Spurs that, yes, in terms of making finals, winning finals, maybe they weren't there as much. They were obviously the early part of the decade. They're there. They win in 1999. They take a little bit of a break. They make a conference final in that time. They get back at it in 2003. They win a final. They then win the finals again in 2005, then again in 2007. And then, there's this period where they're not, winning titles. They go to, the conference finals in 2008. They go to the conference finals in 2012. They lose the finals in 2013. They win the finals in 2014. And otherwise, I mean, they're winning in 2011. They win 61 games that year, and they lose in the conference first round, which is kind of one of the bigger upsets.
And
almost one of the bigger playoff upsets in NBA history. It's like, what in the world? Like, how is this happening?
Right.
So, yeah, I do wonder if now regular season is regular season, but the fact that they just never fell off, like they were always winning 50 plus games. I mean, the one year they only win 50, but otherwise they're winning 54, 56, 61, 58. Like, they're winning a ton of games in this period as well. They are still very, very, very competitive, but not dominant, like you said. So that this brings up the excellence thing. It's like you, there was a period where you weren't scared of the Spurs as much as you were like, ah, the Spurs, they win a lot of regular season games, but I don't know, are they going to ever be able to get back there? So it made which is cool because it made the 2013 and 2014 Spurs that much more fun because nobody expected them to ever get back there. It was kind of like, they're kind of playing out the strings of this dynasty, and these guys are starting to get old, and then all of a sudden here comes Kawhi Leonard, and it's like, oh, whoa. Like, here's a shot of energy that this team needed, and then they're off to the races, and they you know, go to back-to-back finals. But for people that weren't living in that time, they kind of became like playoff chokers. Remember that? There was this period where it was like, the Spurs used to be able to, like, get it done in the playoffs, and now they just, you know, have a great regular season, they win 58 games, and they go to the playoffs, and they just kind of can't get it done. They can't get over the hump. They can't do that. So, but I don't know. Does that, I think when you preface it by excellence versus dominance, I think that's perfect. They were an excellent team throughout this entire period. They were not a dominant team.
And they were not probably clearly superior over the right amount of time
I agree.
Put them in tier two. So, a little more to get to, but I think that's kind of where I'm concluding as well. So, head to head, Lakers. If you look at their playoff, battles during this time, the Lakers actually won four times. The Spurs won three. The 99 semis, the Spurs won 4-0. The 2001 Western Conference Finals, the Lakers swept. 2002 West semis, the Lakers 4-1. 2003 West semis, the Spurs 4-2. 2004 West semis, the Lakers 4-2. 2008 Western Conference Finals, the Lakers 4-1. And the 2013 first round, the Spurs was swept the Lakers. Kobe was out with an injury. So, it's close again, in the playoffs because it's head to head. All these things are pretty close. Ultimately, I think that we have three realistic options here if we consider the Shaq, Kobe, Gasol years to be, one dynasty with an interruption in the middle. So I would say either the Lakers win with a slight edge over the Spurs over that stretch. They end up as a tier two dynasty that they were slightly superior over the Spurs, and the Spurs end up as tier three because they qualify with excellence over a long period. Or we consider it a tie, and both of them are considered tier two. They were equally superior. That one's kind of hard because I don't think you can be equally superior. And then we consider it a tie. Both are bumped down to tier three. They are both excellent, but neither of them can quite claim superiority. So also, if we consider the separate, it's actually fairly similar result. But let's talk about what we think about that first.
Yeah. So if we consider, I don't know. Yeah. So if we consider the Shaq and Kobe and Kobe Gasol things to be separate, it's like you said, kind of the same result with the Spurs too. The Duncan Spurs 4-9 years, 1999, 2007, clearly superior to the Kobe Shaq Lakers, 3 in a row, 4 finals in 5 years. I would say no, especially when the Lakers win the head-to-head battle in the playoffs. But the Kobe Shaq, they're not superior to the Spurs either, really. I mean, they kind of were, but not enough. Oh man, both get bumped to tier three. Neither team's peak stretch quite long enough to make it to tier two. The Kobe Shaq Lakers dominant over a short period, but not superior over a long enough one. The Duncan Spurs excellent over a long period, but not clear superior for a long enough stretch. I guess you can make dominance for them between 2003 and 2007, but it feels clunky and weird. Even if they made another finals between 1999 and 2007, it's still kind of strange. I don't. I think the best way to do it is probably put them both into tier three.
Right.
I think is probably the best way to do it. If the Kobe Shaq, Lakers stay together for a little bit longer and maybe win another title, or hell, if they win that one, the Peyton Karl Malone one or whatever, then maybe you put them there because that then is a huge stretch.
That's a fourth.
Yeah, 4 in a row is tough. I mean, that's big.
4 and 5, but yeah.
Or four and five, right. Yeah, that's a big, I mean, that's a huge, 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 huge run there. So
that's long enough, I think, that they would definitely be tier two.
Right. So I would agree. That puts them in tier one or tier two for me, maybe even in tier one. But because that doesn't exist, because there's the break, because there's the Smush Parker Kobe years that aren't that good.
Right.
They're fine, but they're not that good. I don't think that you can put them into tier two. I think they end up in tier three. And I think the Spurs, I love the Spurs. I think it's a pretty fun dynasty. I think they need to be considered a dynasty, but they don't need to be considered like a top tier dynasty. They are definitely a tier three dynasty just because they weren't superior. I mean, even when they were winning titles, it never felt like they were superior in the same way. Like,
And a lot of people brought up that they never had the back-to-back. you know, the first ever did. Yeah, which I think was important to a lot of people. It's not essential for me, but I see why it's important.
It shows like, wow, this is a team that like needs to be reckoned with every single year in the league.
Sure.
And they didn't have that. They would like kind of pop off and people would be like, ah, it's the Spurs. And then be like, you know, all of a sudden they'd win the title and you're like, oh crap, the Spurs, they're good again.
Right.
Like, wow, they're so good. And it never felt like, holy crap, here come the Spurs. Like, watch out for them in the playoffs. They always kind of felt like a surprise that they're going to kind of work you in the playoffs and slowly and methodically win a title versus, you know, when they walked into the arena, it's like, oh crap, we're going to get destroyed. And that's how the Kobe Shaq Lakers felt. Like, oh my God, like, what are we going to do against this guy? This is over. So I would agree with that. I think they're both tier three for right
now.
But.
Right. Yeah. And I think if we put the two Lakers groups together, I would say I would probably put them in tier two. I think they show a slight superiority over the Spurs during that time. But if we keep them separate, then I think, yeah, the Shaq Kobe Lakers go into tier three, three titles in a row, four finals in 5 years. You obviously dominance over a short period, but not quite long enough to make it into tier one or tier two. So, yeah. So then we, again, the Duncan Spurs, three rings in 5 years, four in 9 years, or five in 16 years. You know, either way, whether you consider them dominant over a short period, that's questionable, but excellence over a long period obviously is.
That matters.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So now we've got the Larry Bird Celtics, three titles in 6 years, five finals in 7 years, four finals in a row. And I would say, yeah, if they were not clearly behind the Lakers in the same period, I think they would have a case for tier two, but obviously they weren't superior to the Lakers. So I would say, you know, yeah, it would make sense. The only case we kind of discussed it before is that, yeah, they had more titles than the Lakers between 81 to 86, but also you could say, well, hey, the Sixers, you know, kind of smoked them between 80 and 83. They were 2-1 head to head in those, circumstances. So I would say I'm comfortable with them being in tier three.
Yeah, they were always around. They always hung around. They were, again, excellent. Prolonged excellence for sure.
Right.
I don't think you could call them superior. I just don't think you can. I mean, they're clearly not superior to the Lakers. And yeah, there were a few other teams that popped up. Like you said, there was
the Pistons at the end too.
Yeah, I was gonna say the Sixers at the beginning and the Pistons at the end challenged them and did, you know, kind of take them to the limit and in some cases beat them and stuff. So it's like, yeah, it's hard to call them superior. Excellent, no doubt. Superior, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, I would agree. So, okay, now we've got the 1970s Pacers, ABA.
Yeah, this is ABA dynasties, baby. This counts. Right. ABA counts, baby.
It does count, yeah. Three
and the
titles.
NBA finally made the ABA count, too. I don't know if you saw this when we're recording this in July of 2022. They finally decided, hey, maybe we should help the ABA players get medical bills. I mean, unfortunately, probably about, I don't know, 20 years too late, but I guess better late than never. The NBA finally acknowledging that ABA players might also need medical help sometimes too.
So. Hey, I mean, yeah, it's great that they finally did that. Again, it definitely overdue, but you know, Dropping Down Foundation, who you know we interviewed, you know, really did a lot of good work to get that going.
That's really awesome to get it done.
Yeah. So yeah. So the 70s Pacers, three titles in 4 years, five finals in 7 years. They did win back-to-back championships. I would say right on the border of tier two and tier three. They were clearly the superior team in the league for most of those 7 years. Was it long enough? The two teams that made the finals but didn't win in 69 and 75 were kind of both outliers, somewhat lucky to make it that far, especially the 75 team. If you look at it year by year, in 69, they were winning percentage 564. They were second at SRS. They lost in the finals 4-1 against the very dominant Oakland Oaks. 1970, 702 winning percentage, second in SRS. They won the finals. 71, 690, second in SRS again, lost in the division finals in game seven to the eventual champs. 72, 560 winning percentage, third in SRS, won the finals. 73, 607, fifth in SRS, won the finals. They by 72 and 73, when they won the back-to-back titles, they tended to coast during the regular season and then be great in the playoffs. Yeah, obviously, the 2000s Lakers did that to a degree too, so it's not the only team that ever did that. 74, they were 548, fifth in SRS, lost the division finals. So 75, 536, fifth in SRS, lost the finals 4-1. So, you know, they were they weren't definitely like they weren't quite a dominant regular season team, which I don't know how much that actually matters here. But I mean, that speaks to dominance at a certain level. Yeah, I don't know. Do we think that they quite make long enough?
Probably put them in three. I think they have a case for two.
Yeah,
I think the regular season part does kind of hurt them a little bit. And plus, I really wish in 1971 they would have just won that. Because if they win that, it's a no-brainer for me that they're easily in tier two. Maybe even a possibility of – because then you have losing in the finals, winning in the finals, or at least in 71 making the finals. Like losing in the division finals in a game seven to the eventual champs does matter. That is important. Right. But still, like, I kind of wish they had made it to the finals that year, because then you have lost, won, lost or won, 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 and then another year after that, you know, losing the – so, I don't know. I think that 71 year just bothers me that they it kind of interrupts everything. And I don't know. It's tough. Yeah, they're really good, and they belong on this list. They are a dynasty, absolutely. I probably am going to put them in tier three, though.
Okay, I think that's fair. I think they're right on that border, but I think tier three is totally reasonable. Yeah, I mean, I would say again, assuming we're putting the Warriors and the '80s Lakers in tier two, I think they're behind both those teams. I think tier three makes sense. All right, so now we have the Havlicek. So, okay, this is going to be a stretch, but hear me out of this. So, going to look and see if we could consider the 1968 to 76 Havlicek Celtics a dynasty. So, I don't know if you might call this like a spinoff or a branch dynasty, but if you're talking about this team, so we had a previous episode where we concluded that we thought that John Havlicek was the best player of the 68 and 69 Celtics. Of course, the last 2 years of the Bill Russell run. But at that point, obviously, Russell, really important, still had arguments for being the best player, but we decided that Havlicek was probably the best player on both those teams. So Havlicek joined the Celtics in 63, was on the last four title teams of the eight-year run, wasn't really a go-to player until 67, although he did collect two second-team All-NBA nods before then. And again, as we arguably, in fact, we argued it was the best player on those last two title teams at the end of Russell's career. So the 69 and 74 Celtics, they won the championships in 74 and 76. They do have some continuity in addition to Hondo. And of course, Red Auerbrecht still is the team president. There's Don Chaney. There's Don Nelson. Coach Tom Heinsohn, of course, was part of the Celtics dynasty, although he was not involved directly with the 69 Celtics. So I don't know. And again, he was the best player probably of three of the four championship teams. I think just more maybe an interesting thought exercise than a continuing dynasty. But any thoughts into that?
No, it's an interesting one. And it speaks to what I was talking about a little bit earlier, where I think continuity in terms of the coaching staff, continuity in terms of the management, I think all that stuff does kind of matter. And that's what makes this Havlicek Celtics a really weird thing. I think people kind of underrate or just I don't think about these Celtics for some reason, but they, Russell retires and they have, a brief blip, but then they're like right back and they're still dominant. Havlicek, like you said, is really, really good on those final teams. And we argued it on the episode we did a couple of weeks ago that he is arguably the best player of those 68 and 69 title teams. And yeah, the continuity, I think, does matter and does make this a really interesting case. Like, I don't know that we can, attach these on to the Russell Celtics, but yeah, I don't know if it's a spinoff or kind of like a child dynasty or whatever, but yeah, there's a lot of continuity between these things. Tommy Heinsohn, obviously a part of the early Celtics.
And they played a similar style.
Still kind of running the show and keeping things together. Don Nelson's there. Don Chaney's there.
Sure.
It kind of looks and feels the same. It's just Havlicek's in place of the other guys. The dominance still feels like, oh, crap, the Celtics are still here and they're not going away. Yeah. Jerry West would probably consider them all one thing.
Right.
as he tosses and turns at night and goes, God damn it.
Obviously they were not the same, had not the same level of dominance in the 70s that they did in the 60s. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of continuity. I think it's an interesting thought exercise at the really, I think you could make the case that, yeah, you could consider this team to be, like I said, a spinoff dynasty or whatever. And have them be a tier three dynasty. I think they have enough accomplishments in that time that I think you could definitely make that case.
Absolutely.
All right. So who else is in the mix? If you're just looking at teams that have multiple titles over a short period of time, would you consider any of these to be dynasties? So first we have the 2011 to 2014 Heat. The Heatles won two titles in a row, four finals in a row. Any case for them as a candidate for tier three? I would say if you look at the other teams that have made four finals in a row, you've got the 57 to 66 Celtics who won 10 in a row, the 82 to 85 Lakers, the 84 to 87 Celtics, the 2015 to 18 Cavs, and the 2015 to 19 Warriors. Of course, it made five in a row. So, we can get into the other teams that won back-to-back titles or had like a similar stretch of multiple titles over a short period. But what do you think? Do you think there's any case for the Heat as a tier three dynasty?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird one. We're going to talk about single player dynasties a little bit later. And I think because the NBA changed so much during this time and players moved around a little bit more freely, including LeBron himself, I don't feel comfortable calling this Heat team a dynasty, but I do feel comfortable calling like LeBron a dynasty, which we're going to get to here in a bit, because he is the central figure in like two of those teams that you mentioned there of going to, four finals in a row. He's the reason those two teams are really go to those four. I don't know that I can call this Heat one. I don't know that I can call them a dynasty. I think some people might. I could see the argument that people would make. I just don't think they are. I think it was too short. I think there was a lot of turmoil in the beginning and the end that kind of takes it away. I don't know. It was it was a big deal for a little while, but it didn't feel like it sustained enough for me to truly, truly call it a dynasty. So I'm going to go know that the Heat are not a dynasty.
Okay. Yeah. So if you look at the other teams that are multiple titles over a short period, you've got the 2008 to 2010 Lakers who won two titles and made three finals. Again, this is not considering part of the overall COVID. Yeah. Yeah.
And this team by itself, no way they're a dynasty. No way.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. 94 to 95 Rockets, two titles in a row. 88 to 90 Pistons, two titles and three finals. The 74 to 76 Celtics, if we're not considering them part of a larger Havlicek dynasty, two titles in 3 years. 74 to 76 Nets, two titles in 3 years. And the 1970 to 73 Knicks, two titles and three finals in 4 years. So, yeah, I would say.
Might call the Knicks a dynasty, but I would agree that they're not. So.
Right. Yeah, I would. The only reason I would consider the Heat like a little bit above the rest of these is because they did make the four finals in a row, which very, very rare occurrence. But yeah, I am agreeing with you that they're not by themselves part of one. So yes, so single player dynasties. We did discuss this, 4 years ago on the other show, but I have a few expanded thoughts here. So obviously things have changed. For example, LeBron James has another championship with a third franchise. So if you combined the Heat, the Cavs, the Lakers over the 10-year period, 2011 to 2020, LeBron, four rings and nine finals in 10 years. So if you were going to unite them all into one dynasty, if you compare them, their main competition, of course, would be the Steph Curry Warriors. And they would have, the Warriors obviously have the same number of rings during that period as well. Or I guess if you had to go through the 2022 period and head to head from 2015 to 2022, LeBron has two rings and five finals versus the Warriors, four rings and six finals during that period. So if you linked all these teams together, if you consider the LeBron to be one dynasty, probably tier three because of, I would say, the Warriors of the same stretch were superior to the LeBron teams. Obviously, the head-to-head, the Warriors beat LeBron's teams, 3-1.
Yeah, I would agree. I think you can definitely call him a dynasty, into itself, a single-player dynasty. Right. You cannot call it a superior or a dominant team. Excellence throughout the entire time, for sure. Going to 10 finals going to nine finals in those 10 years, that is excellence for sure. It's not dominance. It's just not. And was he a dominant player? Yes, but did he make his teams dominant teams? Where every single time did they, feel like they were going to win a title? It didn't. Right. It felt like they were going to compete for a title, that they might get close to winning a title. But there were a lot of those years too, where it's like, especially like the Kevin Durant Warriors versus the Cavs years, it was just like a formality. Like, all right, LeBron's in the finals, but here come the Warriors, and they're going to completely buzzsaw through the LeBron Cavs. And they did. You know, most times they did. He did put up great fights, valiant fights in a lot of those.
Sure.
Won a bunch of titles in those, but nothing felt dominant in terms of, like, what we're talking about. Like, for you know, dominance in terms of dynasty stuff, he's not there. So I think excellence for sure. Single player dynasty of tier three, which is a hell of an accomplishment for one player to do. But absolutely, I don't think we can put him anywhere higher than tier three.
Sure. And then if you put the Julius Erving Nets and Sixers teams together, three titles and six finals in 10 years from 74 to 83, they did lose to the Lakers twice in the finals. But, you know, and I don't think it's quite as – because, I mean, the Heat, Cavs, Lakers, there were a lot of – obviously there was not continuity in terms of franchises, which is important. But some of the players did, you know, move from the Heat to the Cavs and the Lakers. You did play with a lot of the same players at different times over those teams. So there was some continuity too. There was no key second player that, you know, was on all those same teams. It was more role players. But and Irving, yeah, there definitely is not, you know, much continuity between those teams besides Doc. But it is, you know, pretty fascinating that he can go from one situation to another situation. And, you know, whatever team he's on is going to have, you know, basically almost all those years they were in a competition to go to the finals.
Yeah. No, and I think a lot of people probably wouldn't think of this initially, so I'm glad you put this in there. But yeah, there's a lot of dominance there with Julius Erving, and it sucks because, like, a lot of his dominance comes during the you know, the NBAs and professional basketball's, you know, one of its biggest down periods where, you know, people just didn't really, you know, care that much about the league, and, you know, it's on tape delay and all that sort of stuff. And as he kind of bows out is right when everything kind of explodes and the TV deals come, and then Bird, Magic, and all that sort of stuff. But it sucks because, like, dude was great. Dude was a really, really, really good player. But he's just, for some reason, never really, a lot of people won't consider him in that top tier. But yeah, I mean, three titles, six finals in 10 years combined with the ABA, that counts. That should count for a lot of stuff. Does it count as him in any of these tiers? Is he a dynasty? I don't know exactly. I don't know that I have a really good feel on it, but he definitely deserves some consideration for it. But yeah, I don't know if I have a good feel. He's probably out of, I don't know if I totally consider him a single player dynasty, but
yeah,
I don't know. It's strange just because there is some, and it's the two leagues make it weird, and the jumping between the two. I don't know. It just makes it kind of strange and weird, and I don't know where I'm at with it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a different situation. I don't know if I really even buy the idea of single player dynasties, but I think it's an interesting thought exercise, and it's fun to think about anyway. So, yeah. And then the other third player would be Will Chamberlain on the Warriors, Sixers, and Lakers between 64 and 73, two titles and six finals in 10 years. Now, his teams did lose to the Celtics in the playoffs five times, twice in the finals, and to the Knicks twice in the finals during that stretch. So, you know, I'm not sure if I exactly would even put these teams in that third tier, you know, even if I were, like, linking them together. But again, another interesting thought exercise, another guy who's like, yeah, he's going to give you a chance to compete for a championship pretty much every year, even though obviously they you bumped into the Celtics buzzsaw a lot of those times. So.
Absolutely, yeah. It makes it tough because, yeah, just because the playoff failures and the finals failures again. But like we said, I think getting there does count, and getting there should count. But with Wilt, though, it does feel like there's an extra sting there because it's like every time you face the Celtics, it was just like, yeah, you're going to. And then losing the two Knicks. Like, come on, don't lose the Knicks. Come on. Beat those Knicks teams. What are you doing?
Right. Man? Yeah.
But yeah, it makes it tough. Wilt makes it tough because he is, I mean, he as being Wilt, is dominant. He is a dominant player, a superior player to everybody else, but team-wise and success-wise, he just doesn't have it on that level. So yeah, it's excellent for sure. But yeah, I don't know where he's at. But when you put it in that context, he's a little bit more, you know, successful than I think a lot of people give him credit for. But yeah,
right,
losing to the, you know, Celtics five times in the playoffs is it makes it pretty tough. So
yeah, but it is really interesting. Yeah, I think it frames his career slightly different if you kind of link those teams together. And I think I think considering the single player dynasties this way, again, in quotes, I mean, it sort of gives them a little bit of context that, like, you know, to kind of compare them better with, you know, like, you know, the Tim Duncans or Kobe's, you know, or Magic Johnson, whoever, you know, was with the same team their entire careers. It kind of, you know, it's a better way to link them together, I guess, in a way, if you think about, you know, those accomplishments by the you know, wherever, again, I wouldn't do that for every player, but for guys who were clearly, you know, the best players on their team, clearly the, you know, the drivers of the championship during those times, I think it's fair to at least, you know, do the thought exercise for that, even if we don't conclude any of them. You know, again, you know, the dynasties, obviously, most of the fans of these teams would be like, what the hell are you doing linking these teams together? That's absolutely not what you would do. It sort of bastardizes the idea. But again, I think it's an interesting thought exercise.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, for some guys, we give bonus credit, obviously, when a guy sticks with the team for his entire career, at least for an entire dynasty. And in some cases, that should be. I mean, that does kind of make it's clear continuity. Yeah. It keeps them together, all that sort of stuff. Right. In the case of LeBron, like, yeah, do you want to dock him because he's bouncing between a bunch of different teams? Yeah, you could probably dock him if you want. Like, some people might give it credit that, hey, this guy can go to a different team and just immediately that team is incredible and good and great. And the Wilt thing is even a little bit more different because there was other circumstances that led Wilt to go from the Warriors to the Sixers, that led him to go from the Sixers to the Lakers. He's not in the era of, like, you know, LeBron's able to kind of call his own shots and say, hey, here's where I'm going to go because I want to go there. Wilt didn't necessarily have the exact same option, or to the extent, you know, Irving didn't really either as well. Like, you know, it just kind of sort of happened for him as well. I mean, do these guys kind of push to, you know, maybe move to different places? Do they, you know, play a part in that? Maybe, but it's I don't think we should dock these guys as much. Like, if you want to dock LeBron for bouncing between different teams and moving and going and all that sort of stuff, yeah, but I don't know if you dock Wilt the same way, because it's just a different era that he's playing in. So some people might say, oh, because Wilt got traded, like, he can't be, you know, Bill Russell never got traded. I mean, Bill Russell was, you know, and it's like, well, yeah, but, like, Bill Russell played for the Celtics, who was, you know, a franchise that knew what they were doing and were stable and had all that sort of stuff. Wilt, not so much, so.
Yeah. Great. All right. Well, Rich, this has been a fun conversation. This is, glad we got a chance to dig into this. Hopefully the listeners enjoyed this, but it was a fun time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Appreciate this. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah. So don't forget to check out stathead.com. You can use our exclusive promo code BACK. That's BACK. Get $20 off an annual subscription to any of stathead.com's product. If you're listening to this August 1st or August 2nd, you can use the promo codes DEADLINE22 to get a one sport stathead.com subscription for only $58, or code FREEAGENT22 to get the entire suite of stathead.com products for only $128. So check out stathead.com. Definitely a great product, as we mentioned, essential to what we do for the show. So thanks to all of our listeners. Thanks for checking us out. You can, of course, find us on any streaming platform. If you could leave us a rating and review, we would greatly appreciate that. We are on social media, Twitter and Facebook at Over and Back NBA. So feel free to yell at us nicely for how we've defined Dynasty or anything that we've done that you feel like is wrong. Always some great debates there. So thanks again for listening, and we'll be back again soon.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.